Leadership Show with Andy Peck.
Welcome to the show that aims to encourage and support Christians who lead. If I asked you whether you wanted to grow in biblical faith, you would probably say yes. But I wonder what you would have in mind. For faith, as described in Scripture, has many different dimensions. There is the faith that can move mountains, but also the faith that stands despite the struggles of life. Indeed, in many Psalms, the psalmist is raging at God because he seems oblivious to what's going on. In this show, I'm talking to authors of a new book which explores the journey that many Christians go through. The book is called Mid-Faith Crisis and comprises the stories of Catherine McNeil and Jason Haig, who have both faced significant faith challenges and come through the other side. The book is their reflections and also pointers to exercise that the reader can engage in as they navigate their own faith journey. It's an important topic for every Christian, but especially for Christians in leadership, who may well find those in their congregation or charity or workplace for whom faith is not working. And indeed, they themselves may find it's not working for them either, now or indeed in the future. So welcome both to the Leadership Show. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
And welcome, Jason.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Listeners won't have any problem discerning your two voices, so that's great. So I think it would be valuable for each of you to briefly share the challenges that you faced, which nearly knocked you off course, and maybe just give us a brief outline of where you're at in life now. So, Catherine, maybe you could go first.
Absolutely. My story began, several decades ago. I grew up, actually, my dad was a pastor of a very small church in a very rural area. It was the kind of pastoral situation where my dad and my mom, secondarily, pretty much provided all of the labor for the church. And so our whole family was just utterly devoted to this small congregation, this small community. Because of the timing of my birth, it was the only community I remembered. It felt like the whole world to me. The people who were there seemed like my aunts and uncles and my cousins and my grandmas and grandpas, even though we weren't actually related. And due to circumstances too lengthy and complicated to get into right now, my dad walked into a board meeting when I was almost 13, and when he left, we had 2 weeks to entirely leave town, and we were not invited to be seen during those 2 weeks. So I went from it was such a sudden and abrupt and very damaging kind of erasure from this church and community. My dad and my mom, I'm sure, would write their own story. But the story that I wanted to tell was the impact that it had on my faith, my ability to imagine God or the church or even a trustworthy community, having experienced such a deep abandonment and neglect by the church at such a young age.
Bless you. And Catherine, what do you do now? What are the things you get engaged now?
I do a lot of writing and editing. That's in a way my day job, but I also work as a hospital chaplain. And believe it or not, I've come full circle. I'm just three classes away from finishing an MDiv so that I can serve in the church.
Oh, bless you. Okay. Well, thank you for that lovely outcome with such a tough and sad story. Jason, perhaps you could share your story too.
Yeah, I have a very different story than Catherine. My childhood in the church was bright and exciting and promising. And I felt like there was, you always had people encouraging you that, man, life with God's going to be amazing. Your family's going to be awesome. You're not going to have problems. And it's not like we grew up in a strict prosperity gospel kind of environment, but at least in the U.S., there's kind of this backdrop of like everyone expects that the bad things are going to be the exception if you're walking with Christ. And as I got older, I realized, first, the grandiose stuff wasn't true. In fact, a lot of the people who had reached this grandiose status that I thought I might reach one day as a speaker were falling left and right to horrible scandals and things like that. But then also, I started to have really intense things happen in my own life. And, you know, I've been walking for the last 19 years with my my non-speaking autistic son. And we've had a lot of challenges there. And that was very, very difficult for years. But then I started really losing people. And about 6 years ago, I lost someone very, very close to me. And, you know, even though you go through hard things in your life and you think, okay, now I'm resilient. Now I can handle anything. And I think I had thought that. But then when I lost Janae, it was a gut punch like I just wasn't expecting. And it threw me for a loop. And it made me really question for the first time, does God care? I'm pretty sure he's still real, but does he care? And I just, all the questions started tumbling. And so then it was wrestling with doubt, and there were more things going on in my family and just really intense things that made me for the first time question, am I going to make it or am I going to walk away? But thanks be to God, I didn't walk away. I'm very, very glad of that.
And you're serving in Oregon now?
Yes, I am an associate pastor at a church in near Eugene, Oregon. In addition to doing a lot of other things as well. Yeah.
So the book helpfully explores the different stages of a faith journey. Now on Premier, we have a show called Unbelievable, where Christians and non-Christians discuss issues, and they occasionally have so-called ex-Christians on the show. And I must say that often when I listen to what the ex-Christians have rejected, it seems to me they've rejected a simplistic, maybe fundamentalist faith, but may actually have a genuine faith in God and Jesus. So perhaps you could take us through the stages of, as you understand it, of faith, which kind of matures beyond that simplistic notions of the maybe our childhood.
Yeah, I love the way you set up that question, Andy. I find myself in the same situation all the time where I feel like the person who's coming to me feeling like they've lost everything that they believe is now at the moment where they can maybe look to Jesus and find what Jesus has offered. Jason and I are both storytellers, so this book is not full of research, but we ourselves did take a look at the research that others have done, and we drew from that just very briefly in one of the early chapters to set the stage. And what we have found is that those who study the life cycle of faith, not even necessarily the Christian faith, but generally throughout the world as part of human development, the way we travel through a faith life in our lives. And what we found, or what we distilled down into four steps for our readers, is that we begin with an inherited faith. That's what we call the first step. It's whatever we're receiving from our parents, our early communities. It's whether, however earnestly believed it may be by our parents, our childish minds take on kind of a mythology. You know, for example, I think I imagined God as an old man in the clouds with a beard. You know, I don't think anyone told me that, but that's how I understood it. So it's this very early acceptance, just full acceptance of whatever it is that we've been told in our earliest days. At some point, most of us move on to what we called a confident faith. And that's when our brains are forming and our identities are forming. And through something like confirmation or baptism, or even going to summer camp or to maybe to Bible school, we begin to feel that the faith is our own. We have moved beyond the kind of cartoonish mythology that we saw when we were in diapers, and we now believe that we have taken hold of something and we are ready to walk on this discipleship path for the rest of our lives. And what Jason and I have found is that most people assume that that's the end of the story. We were given faith, we took it as our own, and now we're going to just stay the course now. We know God is faithful, so if we can be faithful, everything should be set. And we've also found that most churches are really only expecting these two steps as well. But what we have found in our own lives and anecdotally in ministry, as well as what all researchers have found, is that there is a wall or a valley that is almost inevitably found by people who are continuing on the path of faith. A time after you're sure you have everything figured out, when suddenly you realize you don't have anything figured out. And that can be so disorienting and disillusioning for someone who has not been in any way discipled to expect that or be prepared to survive that, that often we find that people will either just keep it to themselves, don't tell anyone about it, kind of white knuckle it, because they might be tossed out of their community, or maybe God doesn't love them, or maybe they've failed. It's just too terrifying to even face. Or people say, oh, my faith is gone. Okay, well, I'm gone then. I'll just leave. And we wanted to show that there's many additional options to those two, that this is actually a very normal and in times a healthy step of faith. Because as you said, Andy, a lot of times what we are losing or letting go of, we're not actually part of the Jesus gospel, the kingdom of heaven. And we need to let those go in order to have something stronger, more true, more long-lasting come in and take its place. And so we also give the reader a vision for something that comes after the crisis, which we're calling conscious faith, because we think for the first time we've wrestled enough that we really can sit in what we're choosing and in what we believe in a way that brings us peace, in a way that allows us to embrace the mystery of all we can never know, and in a way that gives us true hope, a hope that is not incompatible with the realities of the world and suffering, but puts our eyes on God and God's goodness.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Catherine, for exploring and explaining that so well. I mean, it strikes me to add to that is that the book is a challenge against a sanitized version of the faith. You include the words, the myth of faith as a shield against suffering, illness, and death. You outline how often as Christians, we do not experience God in the darkest times, in spite of quoting some verses taken out of context, which suggests we should. I guess preachers need to be very careful what they promise. Do you think we've lost the pain that appears throughout the Bible, Jason?
Yeah, that's such a wonderful way to phrase it. And it's very sad. Yeah, I think we've lost the pain. And I think we need the pain back. Catherine always talks about this, how, you know, we need to remember that the scriptures were written by a suffering people. Mm-hmm. Pretty much at every beat. And even the New Testament was written largely by martyrs. And we, if we start preparing our people with promises that, you know, giving them promises we're not authorized to give, we are setting them up for a massive crisis of faith later on. I think we need to get comfortable with the fact that Jesus said in this life, you will have trouble. And he demonstrated that, and everyone else demonstrated that in the scriptures. And we need to come back to that and say, okay, here's the reality. We live in a broken world. Your faith will not protect you from this brokenness. Will you walk with Jesus anyway? Because he says he will walk with you. And are you ready to do that? Let's walk with him and discover the beauty that can come in life. But the beauty will look different than you think it will. Your life will not be sanitized. Your life is going to be hard, but God's going to be good anyway. Let's explore those things. And I think setting those kinds of expectations, it's something that I've been hugely cognizant of as a pastor, to consistently emphasize that. And I think sometimes that's more relevant in Pentecostal, charismatic style, you know, cultures. Is to not promise the grandiose because people can expect that so easily. So we've been really cognizant to never promise something that the scriptures are not promising.
Yeah. My next question is also for you, Jason, as it happens, because obviously the show is looking at Christians and leadership, for Christians and leadership. And it's worth saying maybe a few words about the crisis Christians feel when a church leader who they've trusted and valued is subsequently shown to have battled and lost to various temptations. You cite one particular character in your book, but this is a big deal for many. And I don't know how you came to terms with that, Jason, that, you know, you got through it and you didn't allow it to derail you.
Yeah, for me, it was the Ravi Zacharias scandal was a really, really big deal. He was hugely influential in my spiritual formation and coming into ministry. I think You know, one thing we have to come back to consistently is, you know, we use the old saying, you know, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. And we see big personalities in Hollywood or whatever, and we see their lives a wreck, and we go, well, see, this, you shouldn't go for this. And yet we still build huge platforms for Christian celebrities, for usually because they're really talented, or, you know, they have some, you know, perceived spiritual gift. And so it's like, okay, well, we really shouldn't do this, but we're going to do this anyway and turn this person into a Kardashian. And when we do that, like, we shouldn't be surprised that there's a good chance that these guys are going to have the same result as anyone else who's not ready for that kind of fame and that kind of power, because in reality, we weren't designed for that. So we talk in the book about finding new heroes among those who Jesus, you know, lifts up. And those are the hidden ones, the ones who are not out there attracting millions and millions of followers, but the ones who are faithful in everyday lives and are quietly going about serving God and loving their neighbors dearly. And I think if we look for those people, we end up in a much better place, not only because we're not going to get let down by big people, but because then that grows something in our own hearts, that this is what I'm striving for. I'm not striving for the greatness I see on stage. I'm striving for the goodness that is, you know, the presence of God in their lives and just to do good. And if that becomes our goal, man, that makes us far less susceptible to falling into those same trappings ourselves.
Yeah, and it's worth acknowledging, of course, that this is a very small percentage of Christian church leaders for whom this is the case. We hear about them, of course, mm-hmm. and they're right. Sadly, they're very common in the sense that we have a story almost, you know, every few months. But there's tons of faithful folk who are,
yeah, there are.
Serving in season and out of season. So, I mean, there'll be listeners who are thinking, I know exactly what you're talking about here. Mm-hmm. But they may have suppressed their struggles, their doubts, their pain. Yeah. I appreciate this. We could spend an hour talking about this, but what would be the kind of things you tentatively say to someone listening who's thinking, yeah, this is how I'm feeling? Maybe Catherine, you could start.
Well, I hope that there are people listening who are connecting with what we're saying. Unfortunately, these sorts of crises, this kind of pain is so common. And while I don't want anyone to have encountered anything like what Jason and I encountered or any of the other tragedies and true difficulties that often are the catalyst for a crisis of faith, they are very common. And so I would want to tentatively and kindly, ideally, I'd love to hear more of your story, but I would ask you to find someone whom you can talk to, someone who has wrestled with this, someone who has gotten through their own crisis of faith, someone who has come to that more peaceful and centered faith on the other side, who can not ask you to white knuckle through it, but also not fear that you're leaving the faith, who can shepherd you through. And one of the things that Jason and I write about is how Jesus describes himself as the door. And that's often used against people who are hurting or against people who are feeling lost, as if to say, like, you're not going to be able to come back because Jesus is standing at the door. When in fact, in the context of the story Jesus was telling, Jesus is saying he's keeping the door open. He's the one who's guarding the door, not so that we can't get back in, but so that no one can stop us from getting back in. And so I just would say to that person, whatever stage, if they're in the just most initial stages of realizing their pain, or if they've been wandering lost for years, that Jesus is the door in the most compassionate, good shepherd sense, and he's the one who is with you and is coming after you, and he's the one who will bring you back or welcome you back if you decide you want to come, and no one can stop you from the compassionate, loving heart of Jesus if and when you're ready.
Oh, well, beautifully put. Thank you, Catherine. Anything to add, Jason?
Yeah, I would just say, Remember, as we're not accepting the easy answers, and I don't think we should accept the platitudes and the easy ways out. Sometimes the easy way out is just rejecting the whole thing and walking away. And it's just the most simplistic way to move forward. And I understand some people will take that, and God bless you on your journey. But I think that's also accepting the easy way out a lot of times, to just try to start again with something completely different. And I think rather than doing that, I want to encourage you out there, if you're going through this, to walk with the tension and embrace that tension and be curious. There's a lot of pain. There's a lot of difficulty in your life. And that's tragic. But Jesus does walk with us. So learn to walk with that tension, with that mystery over some time. Don't be hasty. And above all, stay curious that God can still break through in some ways you never expected. And that has been true in both of our lives, as we've seen beautiful things come that we weren't looking for. So keep walking in that tension and stay curious.
Thank you, guys. Well, your book is Mid-Faith Crisis, but you both have other books to that can might interest our listeners. So Catherine, why don't you go first?
Yes, Mid-Faith Crisis is my fourth traditionally published book. So my first book is called Long Days of Small Things, Motherhood as a Spiritual Discipline. I wrote that for moms who are so up to their heads in diapers and nighttime wakes and feedings that they can't even imagine finding time for a spiritual life. And I'm saying, I think God is meeting you right in what you're already doing. My second book is called All Shall Be Well, Awakening to God's Presence in His Messy, Abundant World. And that is kind of a year-long memoir that looks at the seasons of life and looks at what God might be doing in a similar season in our spiritual lives. My third book is called Fearing Bravely, Risking Love for Our Neighbors, Strangers, and Enemies. And that is considering what our life or our neighborhoods might look like if we actually took Jesus seriously about caring for our neighbors as we do our own families, and even caring about strangers and even our enemies. So, and then Mid-Faith Crisis.
Excellent. And All Shall Be Well is based on Julian of Norwich?
Or All Will Be Well? The title does come from Julian of Norwich, yes, whom I quote in the book. But she doesn't feature prominently,
okay.
but I do write about her a bit in the book.
Fair enough, sure. Jason, you've got some books as well?
Mid-Faith Crisis is my second book. One book called Aching Joy, Following God Through the Land of Unanswered Prayer. And that is a hybrid memoir and teaching. But it's a story of me with my autistic son, Jack. And I was really depressed for years after his diagnosis. And so we kind of follow that story to the place of acceptance when God isn't answering your prayers the ways that you thought. But I should add this, that in Mid-Faith Crisis, we have in the epilogue, there's a pretty profound development in my story with my son. So if you read Aching Joy, you might want to pick up Mid-Faith Crisis just to read what happens next in the epilogue.
Absolutely.
Sure. It brought a tear to my eye as I was reading it. So bless you. Thank you. Well, guys, we've dipped our toe into a very, very big topic, but we've, I trust, illuminated it in healthy and helpful ways. So thank you so much for helping us to do that. In the outro, I will mention where people can go to get help in the UK if this has triggered things for them, which they need to talk through. So
wonderful.
But thank you so much for all that you shared and for this book. And it's published by IVP and available at all good bookstores and online as well. So thank you to Catherine.
Thanks so much for having me. It's good to be here.
And thank you to Jason.
Thank you so much, Andy. Appreciate it.
That was my conversation with Catherine McNeil and Jason Haig, authors of Mid-Faith Crisis, published by IVP. McNeil is spelt M small c big N I E L, and Haig, Haugue. And of course, if you're at a point where you have found that events in life have caused you to doubt your faith, I hope this chat has been an encouragement for you to realize that it can be a normal part of growing in faith. And we need to talk to God about the tough things that come our way. But we also need support from people who've weathered those kind of storms. So I hope you have trusted people who can you can go to and chat through without fear of it being awkward. If you need someone to chat with on the phone, then of course Premier Lifeline is there just for that. So their phone number is 0300 111 0101. 0300 111 0101. They're open 9 to 5 and someone can pray with you or maybe pass you to someone for a deeper conversation. It may be that having a group in church that delves into tough questions of faith might be valuable. So maybe it's time for you to set one up if you've got influence within your church setting or could find someone who would do that for you. I also commend to you the Unbelievable material on Premier. Often they're looking at particular questions which Christians struggle with. And there'll be thoughtful biblical answers given, sometimes as the conversation's taking place with someone of no or little faith themselves. So as always, there's plenty of archive versions of the Leadership Show. Go to premier.plus to the app or website, and you can download former conversations or go to the podcast provider, Apple, Podbean, Spotify, and you can get many hundreds of former shows. So this is Andy Peck thanking you for your company. Looking forward very much to the next time. Bye for now.
The Leadership Show with Andy Peck. To get in touch, email andy.peck@premier.org.uk.